kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I am not dead. Yay!
Yay!
Joe, guess what?
What?
Tomorrow my computer will be built.
Will it?
I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah.
You've been a new computer in a week.
You've been talking about that computer. So you're getting a new computer. Chris Taylor, who was here with us, he got a new computer, didn't he?
Fancy.
Yeah.
Chris, how are you doing?
Can we be nerdy?
After 10,000 years, I'm free. Time to conquer Earth.
Well, no, put him back in the cage. I'm not done yet.
Attitude.
Purnell is here as well. It is an odd episode, which means it is party cast time. And to get the party started, Mr. Sinister in chat has been dropping biddies all evening so far. George.
Dropping bits!
So we've had bits dropping, vertically impaired. He subbed for his 24th month in a row.
That's a
2 years. I can't believe it. Does that make this our
2 years?
Does this mean it's our 2 year anniversary stream or some shit?
What?
Maybe.
Affiliate anniversary.
I think it does. I think so.
2 years being an affiliate.
Can you imagine giving us money for 2 years?
I'm so sorry, Tony.
Hey, I'm not sorry, Tony. We're thankful, Tony.
Thanks every time Tony gets his bank statement, he's like, ah, fuck, I forgot to cancel that.
No, he doesn't. Tony goes, hey, man, I see my bank statement. I know that 5 cents of my check goes to a good cause. SML cause.
You go into work and you're just like, ugh, the first half hour, I'm just working to give it to Joe.
Jesus.
All these people here at their desks, bunch of cogs in the machine. They don't know nothing. But not me. I live outside this box. I live for SML.
Mr. Sinister with 25 more biddies, all individual, so they're dropping as slowly as possible into the cup. I love when this stuff happens.
You need a new PC.
This is making me reminisce about watching these biddies drop this slow is making me reminisce about Decay of Logos.
Oh, no. The drama. The hard
drama.
No, oh, my lord.
The biddies. The biddies.
Shade thrown at Decay of Logos.
Yes. Which is fine because I know they're not going to listen to this episode because we're not covering.
I was about to say, do you ever feel bad at how much shade we throw at Decay of Logos? Because I sure as shit don't.
Oh, it's a medium amount at best.
I apparently missed that episode because I don't know anything about this game, but it sounds like I dodged a bullet.
I'm so sad.
It had so much potential.
I can see it in my head as we're talking about it. I'm just like, so pretty. I want to go play. Never mind. No, I don't.
Yeah. At least it wasn't made by Gilson B. Pontes. let's just dig out all the skeletons.
That wasn't Gilson B. Pontes. I remember that was there for that episode.
Yeah. Well, this is something that was more ambitious, but also bad.
Gilson B. Pontes.
Different kind of bad, but not a whole lot different.
I didn't realize there were so many different kinds of bad out there. There's Gilson B. Pontes bad. There's Decay of Kronos bad, whatever the hell that was. Decay of Gilson B. Pontes bad.
Gilson B. Pontes.
No. I tried to go follow that guy on Twitter, and he doesn't have a Twitter presence. I couldn't find him anywhere, but
I found the company one, but it was protected, and exactly. They had deleted all the tweets.
I'm like, what are they hiding?
They got shit on pretty hard. That's what they're hiding.
In Scientology.
I'm pretty sure all their games got ratioed.
Yeah. It was... I don't have a fondness for NeoGAF, but or Reset Era, is that what it is now?
Reset Era, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I don't have a fondness for that group at all, but man, reading their posts about our good buddy Gilson. That was an entertaining night.
I heard Gilson be straight pun.
I heard Gilson B. Pontes is running for president now too.
He joined the party, huh?
Everybody get there, get your votes in.
Get your lines votes are still in.
Yeah, lines are still going.
Well, it's Thursday by the time the episode comes out, so you probably missed out on voting for Gilson.
Super Thursday is when everybody votes for Joe Biden.
Joe Pontes?
He has his own primary just for himself.
Maybe that's what happened. Maybe he fused with Gilson B. Pontes.
Biden B. Pontes. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Wow.
You would be crazy to not vote for B. Pontes. I got nothing.
Blue no matter who.
That just sounds wrong.
I know.
It's like, I was blue no matter who, but now it just it comes you out of place.
Like, I couldn't decide if you were getting choked or if you were gonna cry trying to say it.
So, I was trying to cry.
Stop.
Gilson for Prez.
My mom told me there'd be days like this.
You can't be worse than the orange one.
It's true.
I don't know, man. Gilson gets down too. He eats children.
next okay. Gilson game that comes out, we're gonna have to get Purnell on the job.
Exactly. The key is coming down. It's gonna
awesome
miss.
Awesome Prime just subbed for his third month, and the kitty fell, and it hit the side of the cup, and then it hit the other side of the cup, and it bounced out.
That's that. Guess that Pontus power. That's all that was.
That's oh, I get it in real time. You guys have to wait to see the results. I get to see it as it happens.
It for me for a second. I'm a little disappointed.
Well, the great thing is that, you know, you're describing it and it was happening as you described it, just slightly ahead of it. So, like, dang, spoilers.
It's my duty to give the play-by-play for our listeners.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's I have to do it. I have to.
That's such a struggle.
It's all about them biddies.
Our listeners are great. I give each and every one of them a buy it.
But only for $1. Any more than that.
A good old Gilson beat buy it.
Prime, thank you for your sub, though. Thank you. I appreciate you subbing to me. We're up to 12 subscribers right now. Mr. Sinister had a big hand in that. I know that. But,
We had some good banter this episode. Who wouldn't subscribe? See that? I have faith in our gabber.
Banter about Gilson.
Yes.
You can't say it too loud because then Gilson's going to come on as a special guest. Like, oh yeah, God, I know I how love much that. Meet me.
I wonder
you guys meet that. Me.
I wonder if he would be open to an interview to just come on and explain his games and everything behind, like, the decisions behind making them, why he makes them. The decision to have his name listed 40 times per game.
I would
really likes his name.
There's so many questions.
I would decline to participate in the interview as it happened because I just have anxiety about that. But I would totally write the questions to ask ahead of time.
You don't want to do an interview with him?
No.
No, we are getting your ass in here. I have anxiety puked in a bucket prior to doing interviews. You can't too.
Are you? Wait, seriously?
Yeah. I have really bad social anxiety, by the way. Doing this podcast was hell for like the first year.
I definitely get that, but at the same time, like hearing that, man, whew, I have nothing compared to that.
No, Mr. Sinister just gave a gift sub to Lucas. And here comes the kitty.
Whoa.
No!
Oh.
All right, calm yourself there, buddy. It's just a sub.
It landed. It is in the cup. We have problems that we discuss this shit on the episode. Like, the MP3 listeners are going to hear this and be like, what the fuck are they talking about? And that's why you got to be here on our live shows. Tuesdays at 10 Eastern Time, Thursdays at 9 Eastern Time. twitch.tv/thesmlpodcast. Come hang out with us.
Yeah, well, no, ain't no way.
We don't fault you.
Ain't no way Joe's going to edit all this out.
Yeah.
No, it's going to stay in. I'm too lazy to edit.
Exactly. Never change.
We do have games we got to talk about, though. Should we dive into these?
Gilson B. Pontus Quest.
Yes. That is actually the first game that we're going to be talking about.
Oh.
You guys ready to dive in?
Yeah. I guess. It ain't Gilson, but it's something.
Friggin' Gilson. All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Overpass, developed by Zordic Racing, published by Nacon, formerly known as Big Ben Interactive. They released February 27th on the Epic Game Store for $39.99. It's coming out March 17th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $49.99. Take control of big name buggies and quads to negotiate scree slopes, steep inclines, and various obstacles on extreme off-road and technically challenging tracks. Find the best route, manage your acceleration, differentials, and drivetrain to dominate in local or online competitions. Checking this one out, Purnell, how was it?
Well, first thing that needs to be mentioned is definitely focus on that technical part, because this game, when I first took the code and learned the pedigree of the developer, my first thought was, oh, cool, arcade racing with ATVs. Nope. This is not arcade racing at all. This junk is technical, very technical. And when I say that, I don't mean like Gran Turismo technical, when you need to understand a number of like specs for cars or whatever. There is an upgrade option for vehicles in this game. I'm talking technical driving, because the idea of this game is that it's a racing game where you drive either an all-terrain vehicle or a utility task vehicle, one of many types that you can acquire in the game, which I'll talk about in a few. But you have to drive these vehicles across various rugged terrain. And the terrain definitely matters in this game, because while you are driving the vehicle, there's a typical acceleration, which you use the trigger for. There's obviously the normal brake button, which is the left trigger. But there's also a handbrake for hard stopping, and the closest there is to an arcade feature in the game, which is power steering or power turning, where you hold the handbrake and go into a turn, and you kind of like a lean and shift into the turn. But as you deal with all this, you're constantly dealing with various levels of terrain, which results in you not necessarily being able to focus on speeding through courses. So, to give you an example, obviously you want to be driving on like pavement or just general dirt, but a lot of times you'll be driving in mud and soot and whatever. And when you drive on those terrains, you have difficulty actually manipulating and controlling the vehicle. So you won't be able to accelerate so well. Stopping will be hard, and turning will also be difficult when you're in those types of terrains. So you got to be careful of that. But also, you have to drive over like rocks and overturn logs, and like hopefully even sometimes jump over ditches. There's a number of cool obstacles that I've even come across in this game that I don't typically see in other racing games, such as a seesaw, where you have to take the vehicle, drive to the top of the seesaw, hit the brakes, let the seesaw come down, and then drive off of it. And you can't just like drop off of the seesaw like a ramp, because you get penalized for it if you do. So if it's on the track, you have to do that exact motion to get past it. You also can't bypass the obstacle, because you'll get penalized for it. The game requires you to go through obstacles when they're placed on the track. That's part of completing the track. But as you're trying to traverse all these things, if you are unable to maintain the balance of your car, which, spoiler alert, you won't, your vehicle will tip over, and then you'll have to actually press a button on the controller to respawn the vehicle. It's rough. You will screw up a lot. But it's actually not bad once you get used to it. There's, like I said, it's not super off-road. But if you come into it knowing that that it's not super off-road, you'll be much better off for it. There's a quick racing mode where you can pick a track from a variety of different locales and then race for best times and such of that nature. And there's also like a career mode where, actually, the career mode is kind of cool because it's unique from what I'm used to seeing. But you got a career mode, and there are a bunch of different nodes on a grid. Think like maybe the sphere grid on like Final Fantasy or something like that, Final Fantasy X. But there's a bunch of connected nodes, and each node is a challenge of a different type. It might be like an obstacle climb, where you have to accelerate up a steep slope with obstacles on it, or, you know, just like an open bowl race, where it's like an open terrain environment you have to race through, or a late obstacle latent straight course you have to run through multiple laps on. But anyway, a bunch of different courses and challenges. And you have seasons that the game is broken up into. So, for example, you might have a season of 12 days. Each time you do an event, you get one of those days knocked off. And when you get through 10 days, you complete a season. And if you qualify, you can do the final event. But so each time you do an event, that counts as a day. So you want to do your best at it. Now, the way it works is when you participate in said event, if you complete it, just flat out complete it, you get to unlock all the connected nodes attached to it. So you can move on to the next event that you want to do and try to get further and further out. However, if you manage to place it in the top three for that event, you actually unlock something. It might be money. It might be a vehicle, might be parts to a vehicle, or it might even be customization options for your rider, your driver. Now, you don't unlock them and immediately get them, unfortunately. You unlock them to purchase when you go to your garage to customize your vehicles or whatnot. You know, typical garage for a racing game. You can go in the garage, look at any car you've unlocked, and then go into that car to adjust the paint job. You can pay money to replace a number of the parts on the vehicle, most particularly the transmission, the frame, the suspension, or the engine, all of which affect one of the stats on the vehicle, one or more of the stats on the vehicle, to increase and improve its performance. All in all, I feel as though this game is not something you'd want to be playing if you're looking for an arcade race, like I kind of stated earlier in the review. It's very technical. You will not be ripping around tracks. You're going to have a lot of growing pains. I mean, I did the tutorial race like 4 times. No, I'm not exaggerating that, because I did piss, piss, piss poor. I cannot exaggerate how poorly I did. but you're going to have those mistakes a lot. But if that's the sort of thing that you're okay with, like, you know, the understanding that once you push through and adjust to the way this game works, knowing that there's a good time waiting behind it, I think this would be a good game for you to play. But if you need the game to be pick up and play and just like mash the gas and rip through courses, kind of like, you know, like an ATV, just like bouncing off of walls and rocks and crap and just doing whatever, stay away. I mean, I kid you not. The first official race I did, I was driving the car, because, you know, you can do like quick races, you can just like jump into a track or something. I did one of those when I first booted the game up. I was driving the car, got stuck on top of a rock and had to respawn. Like, the car drove onto the rock. I couldn't get off of it. I'm here gassing and braking, reversing. Can't do it. It was like, you gotta be freaking kidding me. I'm stuck on a rock. Didn't expect it. But that's the kind of game this is. You have to be good. You have to learn the skills and play the game and do a good job at it. You're going to work, but it'll be worth it.
Looking at screenshots and videos of the game, it reminds me a lot of the TV show Truck Night in America. I'm not sure if anyone's familiar with that or not.
Is anyone familiar with that? I've never Truck Night, like Armored Night?
No, like Truck Night. Like,
oh, good night, like night and day.
Like,
oh,
Truck, okay. Night in America.
I'm slightly disappointed now. Truck Night.
Yeah, it's just like a truck competition of like going through obstacle courses and stuff like that. And it reminds me a lot of that, and it seems really cool. So I want to know, $40 on PC, $50 when it comes out on console March 17th. What do you think of this one?
I honestly think it's a buy, unless you need Super Off-Road, in which case don't, as it could be a try, because it would be a matter of you knowing that, is realizing that it's not that, but it might grow on you regardless. But if you know what you're getting going in based on what I just said earlier, I think it's a buy, because nice. They did a good job with it. My only regret, and I know a lot of racing games do this lately, it drives me nuts. It's a personal complaint. They always have like licensed music on the menu screens, and it's always some hard rocking like freaking Texas band or something. I don't freaking know. And then you go out to the races, and it's just silent. Always silent. You know, I get some people want to hear the sound of their engine roaring, and they hear the mud splashing over, but let me use a radio or something. Give me music when I drive my car. I don't drive my actual car in silence.
True.
Hey, like, come on. Even if it's like some freaking, I don't know, public domain tracks, we're listening to freaking Vivaldi's Winter, or I don't care. Just give us something. Give us something.
Oh, man. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Earth Knight, developed and published by Cleaversoft. It released Truck Knight. From Truck Knight to Earth Knight in America. Truck Knight. Oh, man. Earth Knight, developed and published by Cleaversoft. It released December 3rd on the Switch for $14.99. Earth Knight is an illustrated epic 2D platformer about the dragon apocalypse and a love letter to classic arcade games. Chris, tell us about Earth Knight.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I'll do a better job than that description. Those things are... I don't know. That went in a completely different direction than how I interpreted this game.
That is the Steam description directly from the Steam page.
I was actually just, my mind was wandering and I was thinking about doing this thing. So my favorite racing game of all time, right, is Excite Truck on the Wii.
Okay.
And yeah, it was a launch title on the Wii that nobody likes except me, and I love it. And it is so great. Yeah, it's so great. But it lets you, it was one of the games that actually let you load up MP3s on your SD card and actually replace the soundtrack with your own custom playlist.
That's awesome.
And I was like, what? I'm sitting here thinking of a thing I never tried, and that's to load it up with just like engine noises .mp3 just to double up just to see how quickly it would take for me to go mad. Generic truck noises. I'm gonna do it. I have my SD card still. Anyway, okay. Earth Knight.
Yeah, Earth Knight.
Let's talk about Earth Knight.
Sorry, Cleaversoft.
Okay, Earth Knight.
Yes, because they're listening.
They might be. Okay. You never know.
No, that's true. I always do my reviews thinking that the people might hear it. That is part of anxiety. So what Earth Knight is, it is a platformer, but it's actually an auto runner. The auto runner, I think, is a very self-contained genre. I think it's okay to call something that, because when you play the game, you're running perpetually in one direction and you can't stop. So, I was like loading up the game right now, and then I saw the game on Twitch. And I was like, wait a minute.
Yes, am I streaming? I'm showing screenshots for our yes, viewers.
No, that's great. I'll stop looking at chat now.
distracted the Chris with pretty pictures.
I know. It exactly started as I loaded up the software to like just because I always load up the game while I'm looking at it in case I need to refer to something. It is a game that so dragons have taken over the earth, but these aren't like Skyrim dragons. See, I'm tying it into Skyrim there. But they are like long serpentish dragons that come from space. And, you know, they basically take over humanity, and humanity offers up, you know, resistance at first, and then they just kind of give up. But at least two humans and one disinterested third party decide to take matters into their own hands and feet. And so Stanley, a bald guy with a beard, and Sydney, who is a little girl, and a not a white girl. That's great.
Diversity.
Yes, I know. And she's by the way, so cool. She's awesome. Anyways.
It's diversity. It's just a bit of diversity.
And, you know, they got and bald white guys representing. So, like, I'm happy.
Me too.
I'm in there too. Yeah, exactly. Joe and I are fine. Basically, you decide between the two of them and you go into these stages and they basically then free fall out of the spaceship above the Earth and land on the backs of these dragons and try to take them all out violently. So basically, as you start the game, you, like I said, you get into a free fall, you land on the back of a dragon, and then you run up the back of the dragon collecting just all kinds of, like, you know, these are dragons, so obviously they've hoarded a lot of wealth, even though they're just floating in space. But yeah, you just gather up stuff, just like random knickknacks and everything, and some power-ups, which, the power-ups, like, multiply as you unlock them through gameplay. And at the end of the stage, you reach the head of the dragon, where you then have to do a Shadow of Colossus-style, like, stab into the dragon, and if you time it correctly, then you'll do a lot of damage. If you just mash the button, then you will do damage, but not as much. And you have a certain amount of time to do all the damage and kill the dragon, whereupon you get a piece of the dragon as a part that will then unlock, like I said, an item for all your future runs. And, of course, the items appear in the stages. They aren't like a loadout or anything like that. Mm. So, yeah, the whole thing is like really nice and abstract and bizarre and strangely beautiful. Of course, the illustrations are really, really nice. Like, they look great in motion. The soundtrack is like, I've always said this thing about when I go out and hear like a chiptune band, you know, a band that like mixes chiptune with real instruments or whatever. And I'm just like, I like this, but I wish it was in a video game. Well, this is the game that it is in. It's like live instruments mixed with Game Boy sounds, and it's wonderful. I really, really love the main theme in the stages and stuff. And there's a few other tracks too. And like I said, they're all really, really nice. The action is nice and frantic. You take damage if you hit enemies, and of course, if you you can smash enemies like with your stomp, or you know, Sydney can sail into them with any number of dashes that call upon this four-armed cloudy like bird demon. It's just called her spirit, but it's pretty creepy. And you know, dude bro just has a sword because he's a bald white guy. Of course he has a sword.
Of course he does. course. Jumping back for a second, I just looked it up. The soundtrack's done by Chipocrit.
Oh yeah, there you go. I don't know.
20 Chipocrit's songs part. Written and performed, more than 20 songs.
Awesome.
That's nuts.
I know the name. I don't know the artist that well.
Well, now you do.
Now I do. Now I have to look it up. Listen to the rest of it. But yeah, so basically the whole thing, yeah, it just becomes, it's basically an auto runner kind of mixed in with a bit of a roguelite. That is to say, because you start the game completely over if you lose all your health. But, you know, the game's only about 30 minutes long anyway, so, you know, that's just fine. And, you know, like I said, as you unlock more things, it gives you more options and more ways to play. And Stanley and Sydney play so differently from each other that, like, I just alternate between the two and, like, try to learn them a lot, you know, a lot better. But I find I'm better with Sydney than Stanley. She's faster, and she's got a lot more, like, cool air stunts that she can pull. And, but yeah, like it's really fun. Like I have played my fair share of auto runners, and this might be my favorite one. So
nice. So the question is it worth $15?
Well, I mean, you know, auto runners that aren't Bubsy tend to tend to be on the cheaper side. Oftentimes they're on the free side where you pay to unlock things or, you know, whatever. Yeah, because usually this is relegated to mobile. I say this is worth $15 just because the amount of things that went into the aesthetic and overall feel of the game, like, it's really well designed. The stages are spectacular. The graphics, like, just look wonderful, like, you know, space with like dragons like floating in the background, sometimes giant, like, you know, dragon skeletons even. And it's like, yeah, there's so many ways to explore the different stages and stuff. It's like you could easily spend a lot more time in this game than you would a normal auto runner. So yeah, I'm gonna say $15. It's a buy it.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I might pick this one up just for the soundtrack.
Yeah, the soundtrack is real good.
I'm looking, the soundtrack is available on Bandcamp for $10.
I thought so.
So I might have to jump on that. I think it's on Apple Music as well, so I might have to fire up iTunes and see how much it is on there.
Yeah, I might have to jump on that Bandcamp thing myself. I don't do Apple Music, so.
Either way, it sounds like good music, so maybe we'll play some at the end of the show if I pick up the soundtrack.
Yeah, there you go.
So that'll encourage me. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Seal Fledge, a daughter raising simulator developed by Studio Namapa, published by P-Cube, but released February 21st on Switch for $19.99. Seal Fledge is a game about raising an adopted daughter in a future world that still has hope, featuring compelling management gameplay and a lovable cast of characters. It's up to you to take care of Seal until she reaches adulthood and becomes ready to fledge the nest. Purnell, how was your daughter raising going?
I'm going to say that it was pretty mathematical, which makes
asking conscious of the game, it makes a lot of sense. So this game was originally something that came to my attention because, as you might remember, I'm a big fan of Princess Maker, which was a game that Gainax did way back day. And I think I did a review for the third game that got released when it got hit on, dropped on Steam finally for the in English language translation for us on this show. So I was interested in what they did with this because this is a modern take on the daughter-raising gameplay style. And what they did with this is a bit different, but honestly, I still found it fairly compelling. So the idea is that this world that you exist in is pretty much Earth, but Earth has been trashed to crap by some alien creature who has a name that I do not remember. Not important. What is important is that the people on that remain live on floating colonies called Arks, above, that float above the Earth. And you, the main character, lives in Ark 3 out of 5. Unfortunately, at the onset of the game, Ark 5 gets trashed by an alien attack. And while excavators or scavengers go to see what they can do to help and look for survivors, they come across a little girl who is unconscious but alive. And by virtue of whatever reason, the administration that runs the Arks decides that you should take care of this little girl for 10 years. And your bachelor life is ruined. But at the same time, you lose the bachelorhood, but gain a compelling sim instead. So the way this game works is that you talk to your daughter who lives with you in your home. There are a variety of stats that you use to that she has on hand, which govern her, I guess, her current status, like charm, logic, strength, just a number of different stats. Now, every week, you have to plan out a series of exercises for her to engage in. It could be something like going to school, taking art classes, you know, hanging out with friends, whatever. And as the parent, you also have exercises that you have to choose for yourself, such as going to work to earn brick and money, because in this world, nothing's cheap. And if you go broke, you're in trouble. So you need to, oh, sometimes you go to work to earn money, supervise your kid and hang out with her. You can pretty much like work overtime and just neglect your kid as a result. A number of different things you can do. And then the week itself actually plays out. Now, as the week plays out, every activity that you choose will drain stamina unless you choose something like resting, in which case your kid will get stamina back. But then you'll also gain various bonuses and attribute stats like mood, basically like, you know, mood elevation, logic elevation, strength, whatever, depending on the activity. And the way this is displayed to the player is your character, who looks like a freaking Weeble Wobble during these sequences, moves around the map of the arc, going to different places and engaging in said activities. Now, usually, it'll just be the screen saying that they walk there, you'll see a progress bar go up, some stats shift, and that's that. But every once in a while, you might see an encounter take place. You have an encounter, it could be a number of things. It could be a dialogue scenario where your daughter, whose default name is CL, it's the title of the game. She might actually have a flat-out dialogue conversation with various characters she meets in the world. Other times, there might be an actual event that requires you to engage in it, maybe through what's considered like the game's quote-unquote battle system. And that is worth describing, actually, at this point in the game. So if these situations occur, it could be one of multiple battles, a quiz battle, which is where the person that you're dealing with will make you follow a series of instructions based on the battle system. You have to fulfill those instructions. There's the score battle, where you have to gain a certain score from the battle system, and this is influenced heavily by your charisma stat. And then there is the fight battle, which is you actually fighting monsters. It usually takes place when you're exploring the Earth during like an excavation mission, which, by the way, you can go back to the ruined Earth on occasion to search and look for clues to your whereabouts, your origins, or the fate of the planet, and sometimes you have to fight monsters down there. In which case, the goal of those missions is to defeat the monsters by dropping their hit points to zero before they kill you. And your attacks are influenced by your strength stat. Now, I made all that dialogue, but I did not really tell you exactly what the heck is the battle system itself. Now, what that actually is an interesting little thing. So, you have a deck of 52 cards Those cards are composed of 13 cards, each representing four different elements. So 13 fire, 13 water, 13 lightning, and 13 like wind or something. Total 52 cards. Now, what happens is 9 of them will be displayed on the screen at any given time, and you need to select the cards you want to use in order to fulfill or commit the combo. A combo is 3 of the same color. 1, 2, 3. Pick 3 of them up, when we make a combo, and then that gets slotted into your power queue, which is 8 empty slots that represent the elements that you've made combos for. Now, once you've gotten enough in certain combinations, there are skills that your character can have equipped, which can be activated to perform various functions, like attacking the enemy directly, boosting, like a different stat, maybe healing a character, any number of things that will ultimately influence and turn the tide of the battle. Now, once you run out of cards, you have to reshuffle the deck, or if you feel as though you've already run through all the cards you wanted to use from that set of cards, you can choose to reshuffle the deck. But depending on how high your intelligence stat is, that might influence how long you have to do a reshuffle. So you can't just like willy-nilly run through all your skills, then shuffle the deck. No, you have to actually be smart about it and determine what you'll be getting and when you do it. Basically, just use them to the best of your ability before actually going through a shuffle effect. But the game itself, it sounds corny, but it's like a weird little like junior puzzle game in a sense that you play when you fulfill any of these different like activities, which is honestly kind of fun. I felt as though I enjoyed it because there's a little certain something about equipping the right skills and then going into a battle knowing that you have the skills you want for that type of skirmish. And you can have multiple decks built, so you can have a deck for each type of battle style in anticipation of being ready for it. But I honestly found that to be pretty enjoyable to do that sort of thing. Now, the hiccup with this game, though, and I feel as though it's not really a problem with it, it's just a matter of just the player itself, depends on the player really, is that it's very samey, just like Princess Maker, though, so it's not like it's anything weird in that regard. Whereas, until you're getting really engaged in like any of the general story sequences or dialogue scenes, you will be doing a lot of making a plan, watching it execute, watch the Weeble Wobbles go back and forth on the map, and then go back home, and then you have a conversation with your daughter, watching it repeat. Maybe a story sequence will occur, but for the most part, you'll be doing a lot of that. And you'll want to have to feel invested in your daughter's progress, so that you give two hoot magoots about the stat progression or degression, depending on what happens. Like, for example, there's something known as the first of the month blues that happens in the game, where at the first of the month, if your kid's mood is too sour, she'll just lose stats, because that's what unhappy kids do. They just get stupider. Like, there was something weird about how, like, I had my kid go to, like, arithmetic class, like, multiple times because I wanted to get her in her logic levels up. And then the next month kicked over, and out of nowhere, the thing just told me intelligence decreased by 5. I'm like, what the hell happened to my kid? She get hit with a rock on the way home or something? I was kind of livid about that. This doesn't make any sense. But then the game does eventually explain to you, this is what's going on with the child. Don't worry about it.
Cool. How accurate is that?
Pretty damn accurate, honestly.
Kid just comes home, goes back to the holler, like drinking like milk from the wrong end of the straw. Like, what the heck's wrong with you, kid? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Rocks or something.
Basically, yeah.
Exactly like that. But the game is like, honestly, it's kind of cool in that regard, though. But I will say the other issue that the game could have, though there is a bit of a solution to it, is the fact that until you flat out tell yourself or you're familiar with the game enough to be like, I have a plan here. I have a plan. Is that how I want to raise my kid? You can find yourself feeling kind of dumbfounded on what you want to do. Am I going to go shopping? Which of the gajillion activities I'm going to send my kid on? Because you start with access to a bunch and you'll unlock more as you play. So you'll have a lot of things you can have your kid do every week. And it can feel overwhelming. But a thing that they give you access to in the game, which will make it easier for you to kind of come up with some kind of plan, is called a focus tree. And what the focus tree is, it's sort of a series of, you guys are going to love this, a series of achievements that you can complete. And if you complete these achievements, you unlock various rewards. Sometimes a reward can be an accessory or a piece of equipment that you can equip on your daughter, of which they're not just cosmetic. They actually also unlock various perks for her. But you can also unlock new activities, new perks by completing previous perks. Just a lot of opportunities for you to focus on a path to grow your kid based on using just the focus tree if you see fit to do that. And that ends up being kind of cool too, because again, that was what gave me the decision, gave me the decision to go, I'm going to focus on her intelligence and logic skills, see how far I can get her. And I also forgot to mention one last thing, which is pretty important, which is that at the beginning of the game, you don't just get the kid. They give you a sort of primer, which will determine how your daughter and you, for that matter, start the game, like perk wise. So they ask you where you came from originally. Were you a surface dweller? Were you an ark dweller? Were you an incubator baby? And I'm not making that up. They also will ask you like what your previous profession was and things of that nature. And when you take those few questions, those few questions, the game determines what various perks you'll have as a parent and also what perks your daughter will have. And also, unfortunately, detriments too. Like, I think I picked something where my kid was really good at creating things, but she was socially anxious. So as a result, she has difficulty making friends.
That also checks out.
Kids get hit with rocks, having social issues, the works, baby. But like, honestly, I feel like this game has a lot of heart. It's got a lot of charm. The music is stupid good. I did not expect the soundtrack this game was popping out. And I was glad to learn that you can unlock more music from the game and listen to it at your leisure from the menu. So nice. Sit back and pop some jams. But I think if you're a fan of previous daughter raising sims, which, let's be honest, there aren't very many to begin with out there. But if you're a fan of those kinds of games, this is already a hit for you. But if you have never played one, but you are okay with the idea of playing like a sim or one of those like typical like novel-esque games, I think it's something that you might be worth you giving a shot at, especially if you like min-maxing too, because let's be real. This has min-maxers all over it.
Cole, this sound like something you'd be interested in?
Yeah, kind of. although, to be fair, I have done real-life daughter raising simulator, so...
Let's be honest.
I might be a little OP for the game.
I don't know. Did you raise your daughters during a apocalyptic scenario? Did you raise your kids
on a floating island? I live in Redneck Land, so yes.
Touche. A floating holler. high above the country.
There's not a lot of difference here.
Oh man, well, Purnell, $20 on this one. What do you think?
Oh, this is a definite buy. This is good stuff. But again, definite buy it with that last one condition. And as long as you're okay with that, pick this up. You'll have a great time with it. And get that OST.
So that's two good soundtracks in a row.
Oh yeah, baby.
All right. We're on fire tonight. Next game to talk about is called Portal Dogs, developed and published by Brain Connected, released February 26th on the Switch for $4.99. In the puzzle platformer Portal Dogs, a horde of dogs are following their king through the portal world. The catch, you play with all dogs simultaneously. Chris, tell us about Portal Dogs.
Well, first, okay. Chris, you got to answer the important question. How's the OST?
Actually, it's really good in this game. I was just going to say that.
That trick.
It's got some good music in it. I actually really liked it. Okay, Portal Dogs. So, it's funny because, like, you know, I was reading the description and stuff, and I was like, oh, okay, this looks like it's fun. And then, like, I saw a picture of the game. I was like, that's not a dog. And the thing that you play as in this game, like, it's hard to kind of describe, but it looks like a kind of derpy orc head with four elephant feet attached to it and a tail that looks like a stick of celery. Like, and then various haircuts. Yeah, you don't play this game expecting, like, yeah, there you go. Don't expect...
picture of it is on stream right now. It doesn't really look like a dog that much.
No.
I like the celery tail, though. That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, the celery tail is definitely a thing. Okay, so, yes, this is a... so it's a stage-by-stage platformer kind of thing where you basically have, like, some real simple goals. That is, you're the king of the dogs, and you accidentally peed on a teleporter. Not accidentally, you intentionally did it, but you got zapped into some other dimension. By the way, in the intro of the game, you will see dog dick. Just letting you know. that right now. The pissing on a teleporter is shown in graphic detail. So I was kind of like, okay.
Oh my God. And rated E10.
Yeah, well, you know.
For crude humor. There you go.
Yeah, it's definitely crude humor. I think that's pretty much the only thing. And I mean, it's an animal, so whatever. But anyways, so you basically go through these stages, and there's three goals. One is to gather up all the other dogs that are just laying around sleeping in each stage. You can bark at them to wake them up from a slight distance, or you can just run into them, and then they will start running immediately with your character. You get to get the dogs to different teleporters so that they will be zapped out of the level. And once you're done with that, that, you know, gives you one part of the three part. Like, you know, it at the end of the stage, it gives you, you know, an award for completing each of the tasks. So if you want to get 100%, then you have to do all this. But yeah, the dogs could be as little as one or as many as way more than one. And they all have to survive the trip. That's the thing. Everything in the game that moves or looks like it's made of spikes or slime will kill you instantly. And anything that runs into them, including these dogs, that comes up in a little bit. But the other thing is that at some point in the stage, there's a golden bone with a like a Christmas ribbon attached to it. And you have to find and get that as well. And then once you've done those two things, then you got to get your own ass over to the portal that has like the crown on it, and then get yourself out of that level and go on to the next one. So that's the entirety of the gameplay. They, you know, the stages are designed to make this as either complicated or as frustrating as possible. of course, because it's a challenge platformer. And then there's other little quirky things, like sometimes your body changes and you become a little like puff of green hair with a little like, you know, just like a little, it looks like a little fuzzy sperm, basically, with a crown on it and still the eyeballs. And with that, you can like get under, like, you know, you can get into tighter spaces, but also kind of fall through the floor at certain points. They do things like sometimes they'll put a key in the stage and the key will unlock locked doors. But sometimes there will be a platform you didn't know about that is entirely made of locked doors for no reason. And so if you got the key too early, you can't cross that platform, and then that will inhibit you in some way. So just all kinds of absurd little things that happen that that you kind of have to figure out. Oftentimes, it's more about learning the stage than like using real intuition or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But that's not my complaint, because, you know, games do what games do. My complaint is that the controls of the game are super slippery. Nothing in this game stops on a dime, and yet they will get completely and instantly killed if they're like within, you know, within a couple of pixels even of a hazard. Any kind of hazard, including stuff you didn't see in the screen, including moving enemies and, like I said, spike traps that are right after a jump. You know, and the other thing is that, like, a lot of stages rely on these, like, trampoline things that you have to jump onto, and they are about as predictable as the ones in Super Mario Brothers 1, a video game from 1985, where you can push the button to try and propel yourself, or you can just keep bouncing on it and see what happens. It there doesn't seem to be a consistent way of, like, making it do what you want it to do. But you have to do it, otherwise you won't win the level. So yeah, a lot of the stages end up becoming kind of more frustrating than fun, because you're, you know, you go and gather your pal and then he immediately runs into spikes. And like I said, the when you have a dog under your control, he does every single thing that you do up to a point. You have to be close enough to him to get him to jump at the same time you jump, and you have to jump at the same time most of the time to get to like where that dog needs to go. If they get too far away from you, though, it's kind of nice that they just fall back asleep, which is funny to me, because oftentimes it's like I would gather a dog and then like try to get myself lined up by running us both into a wall or something like that. But then my guy would end up falling off the cliff, and then the other dog would just go to sleep immediately while I was dying. No, it's kind of great. Yeah, their adherence to this monarch is, you know, tenuous at best. So it is a fun little adventure. It looks great. Animation's great too. Like it's got that kind of Paper Mario-esque, like, you know, everything's stretched to animate and, like, you know, it flips around like a piece of paper. Again, the soundtrack is real good. I actually really like the music in this game and would like to see it bottled up somewhere so I can purchase that and enjoy it separately. But yeah, I actually had fun with this game, and I did get, you know, quite a few levels under my belt. And so I actually, despite this, the controller hazard, actually think this game is a pretty good little product, and I actually wasn't expecting it to be as good as it is.
Nice. So $5, your official verdict?
Yeah, $5 is a fuck it, of course. You know, why not? If you are itching for a new but totally weird platformer, like, challenge kind of thing, then yeah, you could give this one a try. You know, if you're expecting perfection for $5, then I would tell you to look elsewhere. But
if you're expecting perfection for $5, I think you need to adjust your expectations.
Oh, well, you know, we've reviewed enough cheapo games on this site that we have a few favorites. But, yeah,
the perfection.
Yeah. But anyways, no, it's solid. It's solid and good. I would just say beware the controls.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Super Arcade Boy in Goodbye Greenies, developed and published by LoadUpGames.com. Released February 21st on Steam for $1.99. Retro-style classic shoot-em-up. In the second installment of the series, fly Super Arcade Boy through 8 levels while defeating waves of aliens and big bosses. Have funny conversations with the alien leader you are destined to defeat, then save the planet from this massive alien invasion. Purnell, tell us about Super Arcade Boy and Goodbye Greenies.
Well, this is quick as anything. You are a ship on a vertical scrolling stage, shooting down alien ships and various enemies as you progress to the end of a level, at which point you will then fight a boss before progressing to the next level. Now, this game is fairly straightforward. There's not a lot of frills to it and whatnot, but I did have a few issues with it that hopefully, even if it's even for the price it is, I feel like it'd be good if they actually did this to make the game a little bit more clicky. So, I mean, you played this too, just to make sure, right? Like, you had some experience with it too.
Yeah,
you
put a couple of minutes. Cole, did you get to play this one at all?
No, I forgot all about it.
God damn it.
Look, I'm at Two Point Hospital this week, guys. Nothing else matters.
Nothing else matters. So, first thing I had an issue with, ships way too friggin' fast. Now, I get that some people's playstyles are prone to wanting a fast ship. After all, I mean, Grady's, you could upgrade your ship like 3 or 4 times in the speed category before you could get locked out of it. But sometimes you want finesse. You want to be able to fly a little slowly, and the analog ain't exactly giving me that enough finesse to be like just able to inch over when I need to. Maybe if you just had like a button just like let you toggle between fast and slow speeds, that would easily resolve that. That probably wouldn't be too hard to pull off, I would think. Next thing, and this is where I wouldn't mind hearing a second opinion on for sure. I feel like by the way enemies show up on the screen and how fast their bullets go and the frequency of which they fire them, you kind of have to know where they're going to come from in advance in order to actually have a shot at taking them down without getting your ass handed to you.
Yeah, like, it feels like once they start shooting at you, there's nothing you can do because there's just way too many bullets coming from them.
Mm-hmm. Like, you pretty much have to let them go, which means farewell to whatever score you could have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
And that annoyed me. Next thing. So, there's a lot of pickups in this game. A lot of pickups. And while I do know what at least two of them do, sorry, three of them, most of the time I have no idea what they're doing. Are they just points? Or sometimes more points than others. Maybe if there was like a splash screen at the beginning and the option just said, here's what all the stuff, they're almost like a mini manual. It just says, here's what all these things do. That way I at least can say, hey, this purple thing was worth 1,000 points, but this yellow one may be worth 500. I did know that the cross was an extra life. I did know that there was like a few things, like a few guns you could get here and there that changed your firepower and also like getting missile reloads too, because there is a button you can press
that will allow you to fire missiles at enemies. One button, from what I could tell, was just like a straight missile shot, and the other was like a homing missile shot, unless I'm just misunderstanding it, and it was always a homing shot, and the one time it just didn't home in. I don't know, because I almost never see the straight shot. So the last thing that's I generally consider to be a bit of an issue is, like, I want spread those firearm power-ups out a bit more. You don't get your first gun until the second stage of the game. And at that point, it becomes Gradius in the sense that the gun makes you overpowered, but once you lose it, hang it up. You're kind of done.
Yeah.
the next level after that, a wave of green ships comes down towards you, and I got killed. And when I came back, I couldn't even shoot them with enough normal bullets to kill one. But they're so close together that you're pretty much paint scraping your way between them. But again, your ship flies stupid fast, so good luck finessing that. So it made for a bit of a headache. Every time I played the game, it pretty much amounted to, how far can I get on a perfect run? Because once the perfect run is broken, just hang it up.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, with those things in mind, those are the issues I had with the game. But beyond that, it doesn't bring anything new to the table per se, but it is a standard vertical scrolling shooter, in which case I am okay with it. The music is good. The jokes can go either way. It's subjective to the listener or reader. But I feel as though those few things would make the game a little bit more enjoyable for me. What about you? What's your thought?
I think it needs to be a bit more approachable. I think, like I mentioned before, the frequency of the bullets from the enemies is just way too fast to really get far in the game. And it really is like Gradius, where once you use that power up, you know, if you die, why even bother trying? Because you're just starting from scratch later in the game. It's just impossible to do.
Yep, you're outgunned. And the other thing I thought was interesting, too, is, like, we were talking about earlier about how it's hard to dodge the bullets. Sometimes you even get situations where you shoot a bullet, like, and you can destroy enemy bullets sometimes, but they fire at a rate so much faster than you can.
Yeah.
That you'll get that one shot. It's like, I'm going to get the shot. I'm going to get it. It's like, nope, just knocks it out, and then another one's coming right at you. So it's like, well, that was a waste of time. So, well, it ain't worth it. So, I don't know. It's a tough call, because I can't in good faith say I want to recommend it. But, I mean, I gave my reasonings for why, what I think it would take for them to update it and make it more approachable, like you mentioned. In which case, then I think it would be a solid try.
Cool. Well, hopefully the Load Up Games, hopefully they take some feedback and work on this one a bit. And if it gets updated and patched at all, we could always take another look at it.
That would be good, because I want to hear more of that music, too. And more Chuck Norris jokes, because they put Chuck Norris jokes in the game.
Beautiful. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Ego Protocol Remastered, developed by Static Dreams and No Gravity Development, published by No Gravity Games, released February 21st on the Switch for $4.99. Ego Protocol Remastered is a mix of classic platformer and logical game with retro handmade graphics. Be smart and quick, solve puzzles and avoid traps, guide your robot safely. Innovative, addictive, logical, and retro. Chris, tell us about Ego Protocol Remastered.
Okay, I'm going to help them out with their description again.
Okay.
For one, handmade graphics? Do they think, like, Super Mario was made by, like, a computer? Yeah, graphics are handmade. You have to make them. I guess if we can't all be Gilson B. Pontes and just, like, you know, buy or steal all our graphics. So, okay, fair enough, Ego Protocol Remastered. Secondly, This is a game that crosses Lemmings with a Rubik's Cube. That's so much more fun and intriguing to say than to say it's a classic platformer with retro elements.
Well,
it's
I'm
not
sure
a platformer.
They can't just come out and say it mixes Lemmings with Rubik's Cube.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because that's how it is. Okay, so it's not a platformer anyway. Okay. So the Ego Protocol Remastered, which, by the way, has, I'm going to count them right now, 12 tutorials. Not even kidding. There's literally 12 tutorials. Yeah. And I played through them all, by the way. they're actually pretty useful. For the fact that there's only one button that does anything in the game, that's pretty useful. I mean, not even joking. There's a lot in this game. So basically, yeah, you have a little robot guy, very, very, very small, and a room that is arranged into, I think actually they end up becoming more and more elaborate, but let's say, you know, in the earlier stages, it's like a three by three block of stages. And so you have, your starting point and your ending point. Your starting point is top left and your ending point is bottom right. In between, there are all of these grids that have different features. Some of them are solid walls. Some of them have tunnels in them. Some of them have hazards in them. And some of them have enemies in them. Your job is not to control the character, because he is just going to persistently move to the right until he hits a wall, and then he will move to the left, and, you know, etc. He bumps into walls until you get him like where he needs to go. You have to arrange the stage to give him a path to victory. So there's, you know, basically like the way that you move the stage differs between stages. There's four different ways that are stage dependent. So some of them are moving the blocks in a vertical line going up and down. There's some stages that have you moving them horizontally. There's some stages that have you basically filling in the blank, quote unquote. That is to say, like, there's a not filling in the blank. I'm sorry. It's like one of those slider puzzles, right? Where there's one blank.
A sliding block puzzle.
Thank you. I always forget the name of those.
Oh, I am fucking terrible at those things.
Well, they're in here, except that they are a little easier to figure out, because obviously, you know, you kind of figure out the path, you know, based on the context and things like that. But it does get pretty hard pretty fast, I will say about this game. Thankfully, it's got a very forgiving starter set of levels. So, you know, and again, 12 tutorials. So learning it is not so much the thing. So you either slide them. There's also swapping. So you actually swap two of them around, like, in order to, you know, get them where they're going. So, you know, all the classic block puzzle kind of, you know, aspects are here. And like I said, you know, the idea is to get from point A to point B. Usually there's an in-between, like a switch that you have to, like, walk in front of in order to switch on the exit. So you have to, like, you end up, like, probably setting up a path for that first and then setting up a path for the exit. And then they drop in other things in the stage. Like, there's a thing that stops the timer, because there is a timer. And again, this is the kind of stage that, or the kind of game that has, you know, three different points of victory in order to count a complete win. And that's getting your guy to the end, getting all of the objects that you need to get, and also doing it all in a certain amount of time. But the game doesn't seem to care if you don't do everything, which is good for me, because I took forever to get to most of these stages. That timer was in the red for most of my time with this game. But yeah, there's other things as well. Some of the stages will have things that you have to interact with. Like, there will be mines on the ground that you have to jump over while you're switching the rest of the stage around. There's enemies that you have to fight. Sometimes, usually they go down pretty easily, though. But again, all of the action that happens in this game happens while you're arranging the tiles for a puzzle, because you can't just, like, you know, deal with that and then do the puzzle, because usually your guy is going to be walking straight into a hazard of some kind. So for that reason, it actually can get pretty frantic. You know, like, you're basically, your guy's walking back and forth over this thing that you have to jump over or you lose. And meanwhile, you're like, how am I going to build the, like, you know, the right half of this puzzle thing? Oh my God. Oh, I'm dead. You know? So it becomes this, like, really interesting juggling act, which again reminds me a lot of Lemmings, because, you know, you can't just leave Lemmings alone. You know, they die unless you block them off at in a little point where they're just walking back and forth, mm-hmm. which in this game, sometimes you can do. The kind of difficulty I had with this game is figuring out the action button. They're not super good at explaining that there's one button for action It is the Y button on the Switch version. I don't think you can change it. It shows you on the bottom left of the screen four different things that the action button does. It halts three different things. Three. It either halts the character, so he'll stop for a certain amount of time, and that's determined by a little timer that ticks down over his head. But, once you get him moving again, you can halt him again, and the timer resets. One is jumping, and the other is shooting. It took me a long time to realize that these are context-specific. So if there's a thing to jump over, your character will automatically be jumping when you press the button. If there's an enemy in front of you, the action button will automatically shoot. And if there's some other hazard that requires you to stop, then the button becomes the stop button. Why they didn't assign any of these functions to the other face buttons on the controller, I actually don't know.
Yeah, it seems like it would have made sense to just put each function to a different button.
That's what I would have thought, yeah, and make them customizable, but whatever. The other thing is
just
that,
a design decision and how they want it to be played, I guess.
Yeah, and it doesn't really bug me too much. I mean, they do that thing where they don't tell you the name of the button. They just show you that illustration with the four circles and one of them's filled in, which I'm starting to become annoyed by on the Switch when people do that. The other thing is that there is a retro filter on the game, and I thought I turned it off because the toggle for on and off is just different colored circles around a filled in field. So like when it's on, it's a blue circle around a blue field that's filled in. So it looks like it's on, but when you turn it off, it's just a darker blue circle around the blue field and it looks like it's on. So I was like, how do I turn this off? And then I realized, oh, I already did. The game straightened out and looks good now. Cause yeah, it does the curvy screen and the scan lines and stuff. And you're going to want to take that off eventually. Anyway, it has 60 stages, I think is what they said, or like some amount like that. And, every 9 or 10 stages or so, the scenery changes, and that's pretty cool. I like the aesthetics of it. They're kind of nice and simple. They are kind of old school, but everything is functional looking, that is to say. Soundtrack's pretty good, although I'm not going to give this the same, treatment as the others in saying that it's memorable enough for me to seek it out. But this is actually a pretty good game, and I do commend it for being a genuine brain teaser. This is really one of those kind that you're, if you're into thinking games, this is a good one.
Well, then for $5, what do you think?
$5, yes. I say this is a buy it, definitely for the cerebral crowd. That is to say, people who really want to scratch their heads and play a unique style of game, this is the one. For people expecting a platformer or a straight up kind of action game, then that is not what this is. So again, I say that it is Lemmings crossed with a Rubik's Cube.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. And at the time that we're recording this, it's actually on sale for $249. So check the eShop. It might be cheaper than $5. So pick it up.
Yeah. If it's $2, then just go ahead and get it.
All right. Well, finally, we are going to do a quick update on the game Under Hero, developed by Paper Castle Games, published by Digirati. This one just released February 27th on the Switch for $16.99. It released on Xbox and PlayStation, I think, 2 weeks ago and got delayed for the Switch. Pernell, you reviewed this originally. The Switch version, what happened with the delay? Is there any issues with the game, or does everything seem good?
From what I can tell, everything seems to run pretty well, and I'm enjoying it just fine on the Switch. It's, as you know, I typically play in handheld mode when I'm playing Switch games, so I've noticed no issues, no weird skipping, no cutoffs, I'm having a brain freeze, but you know what I'm talking about, no game crashes. God, I'm tired. No game crashes, nothing of the sort. It honestly plays just fine. I guess that's kind of probably what it's like. I mean, the game isn't very taxing on hardware, so I guess it probably just has some light coding issue or something with it that delayed it. But from what I can tell, the game plays fine. Still are an under hero,
still trying to do Mr. Stitches's bidding, despite the fact that he's probably going to kill you when you're done. I honestly still think the game is great. My preferred system to play it on at this point, as you would likely guess, is the Switch, because, you know, handheld and all that jazz. But you really can't go wrong playing this game on any system at this point. It's a lighthearted, campy little game. I mean, you're not going to be running around like getting like new swords and new slingshots and or whatever, but you get the ones you have. You can level up and make yourself more powerful, get your stamina bumped or your hit points boosted. And it's fun to traverse the different platform sections to try to fulfill the actual goofy goals of like returning the boss treasures to the bosses that were they were originally stolen from by the hero, while also defeating the villain by, you know, defeating those monsters in secret. It's a weird little game. But yes, Xbox, Switch, doesn't matter. It's worth it on either one.
And PlayStation, can't forget PlayStation.
Also on PlayStation too?
Nothing's worth it on PlayStation.
No, if it's on PlayStation, it's worth it there too.
Awesome. So it sounds like the delay was worth it. The game is still awesome and it's worth picking up.
Here to that.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Congrats, everyone.
Yeah.
Survivors.
Oh, I had an addendum to my review of Ego Protocol just now that I completely forgot to mention.
Okay.
Just the OST, isn't it?
Just that it's also a touchscreen game, and the touchscreen is way more intuitive than the controller version.
Mm.
So you can swap it around with your finger. And makes that's sense. Actually why I just realized just now that that's why there's only one action button, because there's a button on the screen itself. Anyway, that's it.
That's how they get you. That's how they get you.
That is how they get you. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks all of you for being here and chatting. And
crap, I got an addendum. I forgot something.
Son of a bitch.
You guys are great.